So I do have to admit that I wish I prepared a little bit more for this. As I was preparing, I noticed how much potential there is in some of these ideas, and I do wish that I just had fleshed them out a little bit more. But you know, this is how it goes. Like, we don't always have time to do as much of the due diligence that we want. But I think, nevertheless, some of the basic and the core and the roots of the ideas are definitely expressed in the brief remarks that I prepared. And hopefully they can be a source for contemplation as we enter this period transitioning from Yom HaZikaron to Yom HaAtzmaut. And just, again, I don't do this enough, but just thank you particularly to Moshe for printing this out for me. They had some problem, like I couldn't get them printed in the Heights. And also for Erez and for everybody else in your own way, you know, Michael for getting all the stuff, and you know, Joey just being a powerhouse of a person and making things move. And our, you know, latest addition, you know, Rav Mike, it's always a pleasure to have you join us. Our feelings as Jews in the diaspora on Yom HaAtzmaut are, I think, like dialectical. While they must be predominantly rooted in gratitude and a sense of divine providence and joy, to the Jew of Chutz La'aretz, this elation must be slightly tempered by solemn and earnest introspection. On the one hand, Shavu Banim L'Gvulam, indeed, God's children, our brothers, have made a return to the land of Israel. On the other hand, the joy for one's brother is not yet the same as for his own. And we, notwithstanding some more legitimate reasons and some less legitimate reasons, we remain here. Consequently, our Yom HaAtzmaut experience must necessarily be different than theirs. Broadly speaking, we might consider three different types of galios, of exiles, the third of which I think we currently find ourselves in. The first is Galus Mitzrayim, the first one and only one of its kind. Eretz Yisrael, at the time, was the land that the Jews of Egypt's forefathers had only nomadically traversed, a promise and a hope. The Jewish people technically had never even seen the land of Israel. They had never entered it. Never as a nation did the Jewish people walk into Eretz Yisrael. In that respect, Galus Mitzrayim is characterized more by naivete than by banishment or excommunication. The second Galus, of course, are the few times throughout Jewish history in which Klal Yisrael, Sharui Ba'admasam, in the past, were thrown out of the land that they had lived, that they had made homes, families, communities, and flourishing life. After the first Chorban Beis HaMikdash, the Jews were practically kicked out of the land and forced to live in Bavel. They were subjects rather than masters of the land, foreign governments, extremely oppressive. The land of Israel was no longer the Jewish people's, and they were kicked out. We find Gemaras already making distinctions between the pre-Eretz Yisrael exile of Mitzrayim and the post-Knisa La'aretz banishment, which happened, of course, after the first exile and also after the first destruction of the Beis HaMikdash and also after Churban Bayis Sheni. One Gemara we actually read earlier this year, I'll read it again. It's always good when you're able to pull on sources that you know and file them away. Understand that they can have implications for topics even that you're not studying at the time that you see them. So the Gemara Megillah, Yadalat Amad Aleph, I know people will recall fondly, we spoke about this when we discussed Purim this year, and the issue of it being in the second Adar. The Gemara basically asks how we know that there's a Chi of Mikra Megillah on Purim. And it proves it from the Kal V'chomer, that when it comes to the story of Yitzias Mitzrayim, we were Omer Shira, we said Shira by the Yam. So Kol Shekin Kal V'chomer, if from Sheba L'Geula we recite Shira, Kal V'chomer Mimisa L'Chaim. When the Jewish people were in, you know, a existential threat, Haman sought to destroy all of them. And when their lives were saved, Kal V'chomer, you should say Shira, when you're just freed from slavery. But at that point, the Gemara then asks, if that's the case, we should also recite Hallel, the same way that Hallel is recited on Pesach. So too it should be recited on the day of Purim, although we know that the answer is that it is not. And there the Gemara records three answers. At the time we discussed all of them briefly, particularly the answer that the Kriya of the Megillah is the Hallel itself, And also the idea that Avdei Hashem velo Avdei Paro and Akasi Avdei Achashverosh Hana. But one of the answers as well is that we don't recite Shira on a nes that happens in Chutz La'aretz. But the Gemara responds, well, what's the comparison that Purim is drawing on? The comparison, after all, is to Pesach. And Pesach certainly happened in Chutz La'aretz. So how could it be that we're saying there's no Hallel on Purim because it's in Chutz La'aretz, right? It was in Persia, when the very source itself of Pesach was also in Chutz La'aretz. So the Gemara says that there's a distinction pre-Knisa La'aretz and post-Knisa La'aretz. As the Gemara says, and I quote, Mishenichnesu Yisrael La'aretz lo hukshiru kol ha'aratzos lomar shira. Ad shelo nichnesu Yisrael La'aretz hukshiru kol ha'aratzos lomar shira. And if a miracle happened anywhere in the world, we would say Hallel. But Mishenichnesu La'aretz, that when Klal Yisrael entered the land of Israel for the first time with Yoshua, lo hukshiru kol ha'aratzos lomar shira, which would explain why the story of Purim would not warrant Kriyas HaMegillah. But the Gemara later, which we certainly didn't do, I don't remember if we did that part, the Gemara follows this up and wonders what the case would be after the Jewish people, when they enter the land of Israel and when they leave. So says the Gemara, Mishenichnesu la'aretz lo hukshiru kol ha'aratzos lo marshira, kevan shagalu chazru lehechsheran harishon. When the Jewish people entered the land of Israel, so then you couldn't say it anywhere outside of Israel. But once the Jewish people were gola, were put in back into exile, and they left the land of Israel, chozru lehechsheran harishon, maybe there's a difference between saying halal outside of Israel when they enter, when the Jewish people are living in Israel, and a nes happens outside of Israel, that wouldn't qualify for Shira. But when the Jewish people in its entirety is forced out of the land of Israel, maybe that then resembles, yet again, the time before the Jewish people enter Eretz Yisrael. In other words, there's a difference, maybe, on the one hand, between Mitzrayim entering Israel and something happening outside of Israel, and then when Golas happens, the question arises whether or not it's the same as being in Israel, but people being outside of Israel, or if there's been a totally removal of Klal Yisrael outside of Israel, maybe that's a totally different story entirely. And the same thing happens Chulin. I won't go through the details, but the Gemara discusses the heter to eat basar taiva, and there the Gemara discusses that in the Midbar, either they were able to eat any kind of meat even without shechita, or they were only able to eat kachin. The Gemara there says that that was in the Midbar, but when they went to enter Eretz Yisrael, so then Chulin would be able to be eaten with shechita in the, you know, the settlements of Israel. And inside of the Mikdash, you wanted to bring a korban, so then you ate Basar Kodesh. But there the Gemara discusses what that's true when we enter Eretz Yisrael. So then anybody could eat the meat as long as they did Shechita. But maybe once the Jewish people were Gola once again, after Churban Bayis Rishon, maybe Chazru Lehateran HaRishon. Maybe they had to only eat meat that was Kodesh, or they were allowed to actually spear animals and eat them without shechita. Just highlighting, if you look in the Gemara further, just highlighting that there are differences maybe between pre-Eretz Yisrael and then also once we enter the land of Israel, the galus that ensues thereafter. And these, of course, are very much the first two galios. And it, conceivably, before the Jewish people entered Israel at all, it's a very different type of distance from the land. It's the beginning, the formation of the nation, than when we've seen it with our own eyes, we've inhabited it, established ourselves as a nation there, and then we're forced out, we're excommunicated from the land we've already begun to establish. And so treating the two as identical is certainly not so obvious. But then, of course, this brings us to the third galus and our own galus. In both cases of the first two, Klal Yisrael lacked possession or sovereignty of Eretz Yisrael. Circumstances and or governments kept them out. But the third galus, broadly speaking, is mostly a newer phenomenon, with the exception of the early Bayis Sheni years, and is very different from the first two. The third Galus, of course, is ours. Klal Yisrael and Am Yisrael is in Eretz Yisrael. Medinas Yisrael, but many, many Jews continue to remain Michutz Laaretz. Part of the Chiddush is that diasporic Jews can observe a Yom Ha'atzma'ut to begin with. If I'm not mistaken, I might be, never before has that been a concept. Because either Klal Yisrael had the land and were living there, or they were not, and then everyone did Yom Ha'atzma'ut, in theory, inside the land of Israel, or they were not there, and of course there was no Yom Ha'atzma'ut because there was nothing to celebrate, because the Jews were in exile and nobody was in the land of Israel. Only uniquely in our times, where we have the land under our sovereignty, can there be such a concept even of Jews in Chutz La'aretz, in the diaspora, observing Yom Ha'atzma'ut, as ironic as it is. I'd like to just highlight two important consequences, opposite consequences, of this third type of galus that we find ourselves in. After all, objectively, we have possession of Eretz Yisrael, Chen Yirbu, and Chen Yosifu, and it generates a pure sense of simcha and hakaras hatov that our people should be able to be shruim al admasam. And the expansion of mitzvos we're capable of performing, a state completely Jewish, and with the aspirations to be governed by Torah values, la'at la'at, we have self-reliance, self-sufficiency in our homeland. But precisely because we have this opportunity, we have the land of Israel, it also poses a dual or a double-edged sword. On the one hand, we find, and we also saw this and also in a different context this year when we were learning the sugya of Beis HaKnesses, that the Gemara Megillah tells us and asks the question, where did the Shechina go when the Jewish people were exiled? Kama chavivin Yisrael lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu shebechol mokom shegalu Shechina imahim. Galu leMitzrayim, Shechina imahim. Galu leBavel, Shechina imahim. And where, I might ask, does the Shechina rest? Anybody? In the Batei Knesios, in the Batei Midrashos. When Klal Yisrael is in exile, as a people, as a nation, the Ribono Shel Olam goes with them. And we capture not the full sense of Ashras Hashchina, which is only capable in the land of Israel, in the Beis HaMikdash, but we capture some measure of Shechina, because when the state, when the people on its own, because of its sins, or whatever the reason might be, must be left outside, it's not the time for them to be in Israel, the Ribono Shel Olam Kivyachol resides with them, outside of the land. And that sense of Shechina is captured. Not necessarily so when we have the land. And some of us are living outside of it. And more than that, we know the Gemara in Ksuba says, Kol Shadar Hadar Be'eretz Yisrael Dome Kimisha Yesh Lo Eloka V'chol Hadar B'chutz La'aretz Dome Kimisha Ein Lo Eloka Shenemar, and it goes on to Kol Psukim to reinforce this point, that a man living outside of the land, it's as if he has no God. Not that the Gemara explains he should go and continue to observe as Avodah Zarah, because his relationship has been severed so much. But domeh, it's as if he's living outside of the land of Eretz Yisrael, he lacks that sense, that acute awareness of the Ribono Shel Olam that only exists in Eretz Yisrael. There's no question that objectively, when you live outside of the land, you're missing certain things. It's true, but it's true that in the times of Mitzrayim and in the times of the Golios, where we were completely excommunicated from the land, ones rachmana patre. Ones is not kimanda avad. You're still missing something when you're not there practically. But how can the Jew who's living not of his own accord outside of the land of Israel be judged so harshly? As if it's his fault. But in our times, where we have the potential to live there, I must say not that it is anybody's fault, and there are legitimate reasons to remain here, some more, as I say, and some less. But a sense of introspection and serious contemplation needs to be had when we find ourselves in a galus where we have the land of Israel, Biadenu. Am Yisrael and Medinas Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael. I always find it a little bit funny and difficult, a little bit ironic, when we say the phrase in Tefillah, Bonei Yerushalayim, or HaMachazir Shechinaso L'Tzion, may the presence of the Almighty dwell in Sion. And there's no question that that more specifically refers to the land of Israel with the Beis HaMikdash, when Yerushalayim really is built up, and there were makriv korbanos, and the Kohanim are entering, and the Kohen Gadol is doing his avodah. That is what we're davening for. So from that sense, it's not a tefillah shov, or a tefillah sheker, to say HaMachazir Shechinaso Letzion, or Bone Yerushalayim. But it's with a funny sense that we say the tefillah, knowing full well that some thousands of miles away, the Jewish state is thriving. And the people close to Rov of the Am, the majority of all Jews that are alive, are living in the land of Israel. And so from that perspective, the level of accountability and the acuity of exactly what it is that is just overseas needs to be held with us, particularly and uniquely being in this period of Galus that we're in. But at the same time, the Chatzi Nechama, I don't want the mood to be too down, that isn't the point, as you'll see in a minute. At the same time, because we have it, and frankly, because of affluence and accessibility and ease, we've been able to go. I feel like in this year, like almost all the time, there's like, I was making a joke with Joey before, like someone said, oh yeah, I just came back from Israel. Like in this group even. We're there so much, and we have such a association with it. We've all, I think most of us, have done at least a year there, if not more. The sense that we know what it is. We know what it is that we're missing and that we're distant from. We have a more acute sense of what Eretz Yisrael itself is to be able to celebrate it. And we each know it well. We're aware of what we're missing, carrying that acute sense of its Kedusha, what it means, and also what it feels like. When you walk into the old city for the first time in a while, turn the corner down the steps, for that first glimpse of Kosel HaMaravi, you're taking buses to the various Ari Yisrael. Because we are in this type of galus, with a level of access that we've been very, very blessed, Baruch Hashem, to have, again, V'chein Yirbu, we can identify with the land of Israel, even from afar. And we can say, as the Kuzari did, Ani b'ma'arav, or whatever, Libi b'mizrach, V'ani b'ma'arav. We can understand it. So that sense of distance is felt in this galus even more acutely than it ever has been. I often like to point to the first time that kriya, that rending one's garments, is spoken about in the Torah after Reuven and Yaakov do when it comes to to Yosef HaTzadik. But the time right after that refers to Yoshua and Kaleb returning from being Meraglim to scope out the land of Israel and to return with a report that whets the appetites of the people. But to their dismay, they're met, maybe they knew, of the other Meraglim, who only could convey a Dibarah to the Jewish people. And in that context, the Torah highlights the difference between the dismay of Moshe and Aaron and that of Kalev and Yoshua. Moshe and Aaron, the Gedolim. And yet, Yoshua and Kalev's response was even more visceral and even more personal. In Shlach, the Torah says, Vayomru ish el achiv nitna rosh v'nashuva mitzrayma, the call of the Jewish people, having ceded to the disastrous words of the Meraglim, Moshe and Aaron's response, Vayipol Moshe v'Aaron al pneihem, they fell on their face, something we see them doing at certain moments of crises where all hope seems to be lost. But v'Yoshua b'nun, v'Kalei ben Yefune, min ha'tarim es ha'aretz, which we already knew, the Torah describes in Perek Yedalet Pasuk Vav that these were people who actually went and searched out the Aretz, which we know. But what did they do? They didn't fall on their faces. Kar'u bigdehem. They tore their garments. Vayomru al kol adas b'nei Yisrael le'mor. Only they could say this. Aretz asher avarnu ba lasurosa. Tovaha aretz me'od me'od. You almost hear the emotion and the wistfulness in their cry. Im chafetz banu Hashem ve'hevi osanu el aretz azos unisana lanu aretz asher hi zavas chalav udvash. The sense of kriya, of a loss which actually tears, not the garments of a person, but their heart. That there's an irrevocable loss that is never to be regained. That level and deep emotion that can garner that kind of reaction is only by those who have experienced it and have seen it. As much as Moshe v'Aaron identified, who more than they, with a promise, with a hope, they could internalize that, even without seeing it. But walking on the soil, walking through the streets and feeling its kedusha, is accompanied by not only Vayipol al Pnehem, but Vayikaru es Bigdehem. There was no going back. Their garment, just as their hearts, would never be recovered. So we are really tasked, as I say, with this double-edged sword. On the one hand, the level of accountability, but also the benefit and the zechus, even being the Bnei HaGola, and I'll keep reinforcing, there are many, many good reasons, some better and some worse, to be in Chutz La'aretz, even when we have the opportunity to go. But we're faced, as I say, with these two opposite dimensions. In this vein, to celebrate a little bit what we have, though distant, as we say, Libi Bamizrach, and what, you know, and what we're familiar with, I'd just like to speak for the rest of the time that I have about the laws themselves of Kriya, which is something that we know we do when we see Arei Yehuda, Yerushalayim, and the Beis HaMikdash, B'Churbana, very halacha l'maisa. I don't want to engender mourning, you know, as we head towards Yom HaAtzmaut, although that wouldn't be so terrible, given, you know, the state of things, and also from the fact that the way that it's celebrated always is that we transition from Yom HaZikaron to Yom HaAtzmaut. So without engendering too much of a sense of mourning, I think the idea of Kriya in these sacred places is a response reflecting that irrevocable loss of the highest proportion. The mere fact that there's a chiyuv for Migdash and Yerushalayim and Arei Yehuda goes to the indispensable role that these areas, geographical locations, play in the heart of every Jew. All too often, unfortunately, but not in our case, but unfortunately too much it's the time, that the significance and the stature of such things are only recognized after they're gone, when the kriya has to be done, as opposed to understanding what it is that we have in front of us when it's still with us. Kriya is a way noting at the time of disaster what it is that we had all along, that now that it's no longer there, lo aleinu, the loss is visceral and is irrevocable. So I hope by studying the laws, it doesn't give too much despondence to people. Kriya, after all, is in Hilchos Avelos, but gives us a sense of its value and the role that it plays. Though we remain here, we're capable of identifying, hopefully, with these special places and what they are to engender in the lives of every single Jew. After all, that is the best way, when we're talking about Yom HaAtzmaut and the significance, really, at the end of the day, of Eretz Yisrael, the best way is to more deeply understand the different aspects of Kedusha that we sometimes overlook. When we think about Eretz Yisrael, we often don't think of it in categories. But the truth is that there are so many different layers, and there are so many different things that could be understood when you look more closely, different elements to appreciate that we've never appreciated before. And I hope we can do that in the remaining 10, 50 minutes that we have together, to appreciate the land of Israel through the laws of Kriya. So the Gemara at the end of Moed Katan, on Chavav Amar Aleph, I think I have it, I may not. See, you know, if Michael was really good, he would have even known that's what I needed. I'm just joking with you. Either way, in terms of the laws of Kriya, there seemed to be a dual basis for rending one's garments. One is the sense of mourning, when a person, as I say, experiences a loss that's irrevocable, they tear their garments, as the Gemara in Moed Katan, on a different Gemara, this one I do think I have here, as the Gemara in Moed Katan, Chavav Amar Beis says, Thank you. Thank you, Joey. Taking Michael's role. As the Gemara explains, if you have a single garment and unfortunately had to use it multiple times when it comes to Kriya, the Gemara wonders at what point is the shirt just so ridden with tears that you can't use it for future Kriyos. There's a machlokes. We paskin that the Kriyos can extend all the way until the belly button of the shirt. But there's another shita that says that the point you have to stop tearing and then move aside is ad libo, to one's heart. Afal pish ein raya ledavar, even though we have no raya for this, that the kriya can only go ad libo, zecher ledavar. As the pasuk says, shenemar v'kiru levavchem ve'al begdeichem. Don't tear your beged. That's not what you're tearing. The beged is only a symbol for the kriya of the heart. That is really representative of what you're doing. There's a certain sense of avil that is associated, that comes along, and is concretized, like through the tearing of the garment. But there's also another element of it as well that is expressed by Yeshayahu Anavi, when talking about actually our inyan of Arei Yehuda, Yerushalayim, and Mikdash, there's a certain sense of tshuva that comes along. When the Ribbono Shel Olam sees us responding appropriately to whatever suffering, or in our case, the destruction of our beloved cities, certain sense that we have appreciation for what it is that we're doing. We're not tearing only as a visceral reaction to avel, to mourning, but tearing also indicates that we've understood what it is that we've lost, which in some cases can act, certainly in ours, as a cry, a clarion call to tshuva itself. Ribono shel Olam, we know what this is and we know how important that it is. So when it comes to tearing Kriya on Arei Yehuda, Yerushalayim, and Mikdash, these are certainly two elements. One which is, I guess you can say, past, and one which is future focused. A sense that we've lost, but also that we now have understood and we're ready to be restored, even though at one point in time we missed it and couldn't understand it. So the Gemara in Moed Katan, quoting, I think, from Maseches Machos, Perek Tes, describes certain situations in which a person is to tear Kriya, but a Kriya that's Eino Misachem. A kriya that, even after significant time passes, you can't patch up in a way that is unnoticeable, that there was never a kriya there. Famously, this is true when a person's parents pass away. But there the Gemara records, ve'elu korin kirayin she'ein mesachin, that you can never, ever fix. And again, ha'koreya al-ave ve'al-imo, the paradigm of this type of kriya, a person's parents, he only has one set, and it's unimaginable in terms of the role that parents play in a person's life. That's a kriya, she'eino mesachem, practically, but also metaphorically. And then along the lines in the list, the Gemara says as follows. The Al-Arei Yehuda, which of course is like the southern region south of Eretz Yisrael, of Yerushalayim, excuse me, and it also includes part of Yerushalayim, part of Har Habayis, was part of the Nachala of Shevet Yehuda. The Al-Hamigdash, on the Beis Hamigdash, Va'al Yerushalayim, all, again, Bechorbana. Interesting to note the order. You would have thought it would have said Arei Yehuda, which is the largest portion, then Yerushalayim, and then Mikdash, where the concentric circles are expressed in the language of the Mishnah. Indeed, if you read the Rambam, that's how the Rambam organizes them in Shulchan Aruch, following suit. Arei Yehuda, Yerushalayim, and Mikdash. But here, in the Braisa, it's Arei Yehuda, Ve'al HaMikdash, Va'al Yerushalayim. And the Gemara goes on to ask, Minalan, how we know that you tear Kriya, and a Kriya that's Eino Mesache, Le'ola. And it quotes the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Vayavo, which is describing the aftermath of the tragic killing of Gedaliah ben Achikam, Tzom Gedaliah. And you had these men, Vayavo Anashim Mishchem, Mishilo Umishomron, running from parts of Nachlas, Menashe, and Ephraim. Shmonim ish megulche zaken ukruei begadim umiskodedim umincha ulavona biyadim lavi veis Hashem. These are people in tremendous mourning. Nebuchadnezzar had just destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, and they, apparently from the areas of Ephraim and Manasseh, were able, from a lookout, to see the destroyed cities of Ari Yehuda, of Yerushalayim, and the Mikdash. And it describes that they were Keruei Begadim. And it continues speaking about a pasuk in Yeshaya, which we spoke before, to include, and that you're supposed to make these statements, etc. Arei Kadshecha Hayu Midbar, referring to the holy cities of the Ribono Shel Olam, Arei Yehuda. The Korea, you say that phrase, whenever you see Arei Yehuda de Chorbana, you say Arei Kadshecha Hayu Midbar, the Korea, and then you tear. Yerushalayim de Chorbana, you say Tzion Midbar, Haisa Yerushalayim Shemama, the Korea, and then Beis HaMikdash B'Churbano, Omer, Beis Kachenu Usfartenu, Asher Hilalucha Avosenu, Haye L'Sreifas Eish, B'chol Mach Madenu Haya L'Chorva V'Korea. And that is the Gemara, describing the Kriya of all those places. But what is the relationship between these three locations geographically, and why do they, in particular, engender Kriya? It may help to take each one on its own. As I said, when it comes to Arei Yehuda versus Yerushalayim, some of the Rishonim wonder two things about Arei Yehuda. If you remember, the pasuk quoted to prove that Arei Yehuda engenders Kriya included three locations: the Shomron, Shiloh, and Shechem. Tosfos wonder, maybe you need to see three places in order. Well, even before that, those three locations are not in Arei Yehuda. So some of the Rishonim wonder if that's the case, the Beis Yosef in particular, in Siman Tovkuf Samach Aleph, why is there not Kriya if you see any city in Israel that's destroyed? Why specifically Arei Yehuda? Indeed, the Tor, when he quotes this in Siman Tovkuf Samach Aleph, everyone says it's a Tosover, but he says Arei Yisrael b'churban. But at the end, Tosfos rejected and say apparently, lo mistaber, the idea wasn't mistaber, apparently, they were coming really from these places, but they were overlooking Arei Yehuda. Separately, Tosfos wondered that maybe, in order to engender the Kriya on Arei Yehuda, you have to see more of a significant subset. All three, have to see three locations in Arei Yehuda that were destroyed, and not only one. Tosfos, they know, I made a mistake, this is not mistaber, they say, it can't be, because after all, they just actually say, just it can't be, it doesn't make sense. And he doesn't fully give an explanation. But some of the Rishonim wonder, the Ramban and the Rush, they wonder whether or not you should have a separate Kriya for seeing each one of the cities of Arei Yehuda upon seeing them in ruins. And they explain that because of the fact that Yerushalayim is singled out, it must be that there is only one tear for seeing the Arei Yehuda, because otherwise Yerushalayim is also a part, as I said, of Arei Yehuda. So why identify it in particular? Apparently there's a difference between Arei Yehuda and Yerushalayim. But nevertheless, even though it's true that if you see anyone of Arei Yehuda, you tear Kriya, you nevertheless, Yerushalayim has an extra distinctive Kedusha, in which you tear on it, even if you've already encountered one of the other Arei Yehuda. So much so, they say that if one sees, but at the same time, if someone sees Yerushalayim, they aren't supposed to tear Kriya on encountering one of the Arei Yehuda. Yerushalayim seems to play a dual role. On the one hand, it's one of the Arei Yehuda, and it's the chief of the Arei Yehuda, Shebekulam. But at the same time, it has its own distinctive role, that even after you've torn for Arei Yehuda, you still tear for Yerushalayim. And we find a similar question about the relationship between Yerushalayim and Mikdash. And the Gemara records somewhat of a stira. Gemara says, one case seems to sound like you make separate tears for Yerushalayim and Beis HaMikdash, but another says that you're Korea on Beis HaMikdash, and then just Mosif, you add a little bit for Yerushalayim. Gemara says, how does it make sense? Which one is it? Do you make two separate kriyos? Or do you make one for Mikdash and then you add a little bit for Yerushalayim? Gemara says there's a difference. If you first encounter Beis HaMikdash, however that is, Rashi, the Rambam discuss it, So then you make a kriya for Beit HaMikdash, and then you're most of a little bit for Yerushalayim. Apparently, Yerushalayim is just considered an extension of Mikdash, and therefore there's not a separate kriya. But at the same time, it's independent enough that we don't just say Korea Echad al Kula. That once you've seen Mikdash, you've seen the entire thing. But if you first see Yerushalayim, which is also apparently a function to some degree of Mikdash, then you make one kriya for Yerushalayim and a separate one when you encounter the Kedusha of Beis HaMikdash. What do these three halachos, or these three categories, teach us about these three very important places, apparently, that engender a kriya, she'enu misacha, that when they're in their churban, it's so terrible that we see it the same way a person has lost a father and their mother. There's something that we've lost that can never be regained, that is cuts to the core of a Jew's identity in this world. I think the idea of Ara Yehuda, taking one at a time, and really with this I'll conclude, I know there are people that have events, much more important events to go to. I was being serious. But I now discovered that there's a parking space from 6 o'clock, which is good, in case I ever need that. That only opens at 6. That was my whole chab, is the other one only opens at 7, which is why, you know, it's a good time to come. But this one now, it's very good. It's like really right down. A little bit of further walk, but it's good. In terms of Ara Yehuda, how to understand the sense of Ara Yehuda is that what we have when we have it is the privilege to live a commoner existence in territory striking distance of the Beis HaMikdash. At high altitudes, mountaintops, and peaks, to be able to set sight and behold Makom HaMikdash, Makom HaShchina. Occupying the same chelek is Ara Yehuda, stretching into half of Yerushalayim. It's all continuous, the land of Ara Yehuda. It all belongs to one Shevet, and it even encroaches into Yerushalayim, even including part of Har HaBayis. But yet nevertheless extending well southward of Yerushalayim, living in that one chelek that connects Mikdash Yerushalayim and just the Shkunot, is a special opportunity. The ability to implement and apply the principle of Mikdash to this outer range, the outer limits, to cities, communities, and settlements close, but still far from Mikdash, is the Chiddush of Ara Yehuda. Haroe Ara Yehuda b'churbanan, Omer, Are Kachacha b'churbanan v'koreya. But if he rends his garments for Yerushalayim, Hareze Kadosh Shebekula. Because Yerushalayim is Klal Yisrael's city, and a common city, a city in which people live their daily lives. It's an Ir Shechurba LaYachtav, where there are no distinctions between people. Your mark is only but that you're a Jew. And perhaps Yerushalayim is Lo Nischalka L'Shvatim. There is no Shevet that claims right to the city that belongs to all. Either way, it's the height of our aspiration as Jews, the overflow of Kedushas Hashchina that fills the entire city. According to the Rambam, the Kohen Gadol, even for the short times he was off duty, which was very rare, would live the more common parts of his day in Yerushalayim, under a kind of house arrest of sorts. In a certain sense, it overlaps with the quintessence of Kedushas Ara Yehuda, because it's about living life with the influence and the hashpa'a, the shefa of Shechina. And for that reason, when you tear kriya for Yerushalayim, it counts for Ara Yehuda's. But not the other way around. Yerushalayim's energy flows directly from Mikdash. It is the extension of Mikdash. As the Rambam writes at the end of Perek Vav, Hilchos Beis HaBechira, regarding a different issue of Kedusha Rishona, Lo Kitcha La'asid Lavo, Kedusha Shnia Kitcha La'asid Lavo, the Rambam writes, I'll only read a piece of it because I know we're running short on time. The Rambam at the very end of Perek Vav writes, V'lama ani omer b'migdash v'yushalayim, that Kedusha Rishona is Kitcha La'asid Lavo. Whereas for Kedusha's Karka, for Trumas u'Maestros, Kedusha Rishona is not Kitcha La'asid Lavo, but Yushalayim and Migdash was. Why? And he says, "Kedusha Sharet Yisrael LeInyan Shvius UMaisus Lo Kitcha La'asid Lavo." Why? L'fisha Kedushas HaMikdash V'Yushalayim Emnei HaShchina. It's because of Shchina, V'Shchina Eina B'Teila. God's presence can never be nullified. V'arayu Omer, another thing that we saw, v'hashimosi es mikdashechem. I destroyed your mikdash. V'amru chachamim, af al pi sheshomimin, b'tushasan hayu omdin. Even though they're destroyed, the kedusha remains, which is why a shul, after it's destroyed, the property must still be responded to in an appropriate manner. The Kedusha of Shechina never leaves. And the Rambam, by sleight of hand, includes Yerushalayim in that enclosure of Kedushas Mikdash. Consequently, one is Mosif, rather than a totally separate tear, when he reaches Beis HaMikdash first, the essence of Kedushas Yerushalayim primarily, but not entirely. Because it's an extension, a safa be'alma, of Kedushas Mikdash. It's not a new kriya, but an extension. Yet another loss, a different loss, flowing from the epicenter of Shechina. And Beis HaMikdash, as the Pasuk in Yeshaya says, Beis Kadshenu v'Tifartenu, Choser v'Koreya. It's a real, real kriya, She'enu Mesache. One, according to the Rambam, is supposed to tear kriya until all layers have been exposed and their heart remains bare. The Kedusha of Mikdash is something that we always perceive as a loss that is so great, not having the ability to bring karbanos, to daven HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for him to dwell. There's a difference when we have the makom of the Shechina, but also when we have the walls built up. And the reality is that it needs a separate kriya in its own. And what we really have seen in a small way from these different dinim of kriya is that there are different elements, concentric circles, of what the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael really is and what it means. The idea to live in a secular, I'll explain what I mean, environment whose epicenter is its Kedusha of the Migdash and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to live regular life, but to be informed and physically connected geographically to Shechina, to be able to see it from the high mountaintops of Judea, and then to be able to do that in a more acute sense, in the old city and the walls of Yerushalayim, ultimately reaching its apex and its climax in Kedushas Mikdash itself. And this is what we ought to appreciate. When we think about Eretz Yisrael, this is part of it. There's so, so much more. But to think about what we have, and particularly as B'nai Chutz La'aretz, the idea of appreciating what we have before it's gone is particularly important. And I want to emphasize a last time, there are very legitimate reasons to be in Chutz La'aretz. This is not an Aliyah speech. But part of any speech, and part of any Jew who understands what his values ought to be, is an appreciation, no matter what type of galus we're in, the first, the second, or the third type, that we identify, even from afar, with the land of Israel. And even if we practically cannot be there, to appreciate what we have, and especially to support what is already there, is certainly all of our obligations, never mind the fact that we could go if we wanted, but also because we know what it is, we felt that we've experienced it. And Emir Tashem, this Yom HaAtzma'ut, but every single day, it should be something we always think about in our tefillos and beyond. Wish everybody a wonderful Yom HaAtzma'ut.